Valzomine. Well, Valentine's Day is approaching once again, so restaurants and other related venues are looking forward to ringing up sales. Some people are really looking forward to the big day, big date, all the bells and whistles. Some are desperate to find someone to spend the day with, and others just ignore it completely. In fact, Jen Bryant, a matchmaker whom I've interviewed for last year's Valentine's Day show, has actually scheduled a Cupid's Revenge pub crawl the day after. So, this year, I thought I'd talk to couples who have been married more than a couple of decades. Bill and Josephine Littlejohn, Odell and Dorothy Gifford, and Harry and Marion Ferris. Bill Littlejohn had just been released from hospice and returned into the VA system that morning, and his thoughts weren't focused. But when I smiled at him, his return smile was bright as can be. No marriage is perfect, of course. Each couple admitted experiencing ups and downs, but still love their spouses. In fact, one couple pursued marriage counseling to ensure they retained their love for each other. I asked each couple to give their names and the date they were married.
I'm Josephine Littlejohn. My husband, William Littlejohn. We were married January 30th, 1946. We just celebrated our 69th anniversary the other day.
So you met just after the war ended then?
Yes.
So let's get a little backstory of the two of you before you met. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Williston, North Dakota. I moved out to Sacramento in, I think it was 1940. My parents moved out, but I got here before they did, and I had one more year of high school, so I graduated from McClatchy.
So what brought you to California?
Well, we've been here ever since, except for 4 years after we were married, and we lived in Mitchell, Nebraska, which is Bill's hometown.
So Nebraska, North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
The heart of the country.
Yeah. So I met him. He was a little sailor boy, as you can see over there. Well, right there, he was a little swabby like that, this picture on this side.
Okay.
Anyway, he was in the Navy. Then when we got married, he was a chief. So we got married. He had on his chief's uniform. And I just wore a suit because his ship was going to be taken out of commission in Philadelphia. So we didn't have enough time for a big fancy wedding. So I just married in a suit like that up there.
How did you actually meet?
Well, now that's a story. Let's see now. I was single, of course. I was working at McClellan Air Force Base.
And how old were you?
I was about, at the time I met him, I must have been about 22. And I was working at the Air Force Base over here. And I had several jobs there as a clerk typist. At one time I worked for the flight test office where we took care of the flight records. And then my last 3 years that I was at McClellan, I went into mechanics, and I worked as a instrument mechanic to get my high 3. And so I retired from there in June 1977, I believe it was. Anyway, I'm 93, by the way. No! What am I, 92? We'll be 93. He'll be 93 in May. I'll be 93 in June. Okay. Anyway, I was single, of course, and a girlfriend of mine had made a date with a sailor that she met in her brother's restaurant. She was working over there, and she made a date with this sailor, and she says, I'm supposed to meet him over at the cellar, which was a bar that was downstairs, you know, a nice, you know, where all the sailors congregated and stuff, you know. So so she wanted me to go with her. So I said, okay. And My sister Helen happened to be home at the time. She was getting a divorce from her husband. So she went with us. The three of us went down to the cellar. And there was a jillion of sailors in their bell-bottom trousers, coats of navy blue. Anyway, it ended up where my sister was going to stay over to my other sister's house, which was in North Sacramento. And so Bill ended up taking her to my sister's in North Sac. And I don't know how I got home, probably taxi or whatever it was. And some other guy latched onto me. I think he was kind of ball-headed. Anyway, he asked my sister for my phone number. So that's how that all started. He wanted to have a date with me, so that's how we started. And we corresponded for what, about 4 years before we got married?
Well, what was your first date?
What was it? God, I don't even remember.
What?
No.
What?
Well, you know, I was footloose and fancy free, and I was dating the officers at the base, and I don't remember. You know what I mean? So he always said he beat out all those shave tails.
Good job.
So I guess that's the story. We got married and we went to Philadelphia for about 6 months while they took the ship out of commission. And then he was stationed on an aircraft carrier. So I went to his hometown in Nebraska. Hadn't met any of his family or anything. And his sister and niece met me. I think I had to come in by train, I think, because the plane didn't come to Mitchell. And they met me at the train. And so I stayed with his sister, Isabel, oh gosh, till he came home. I think it was how long before you came to Mitchell? After I went from Philadelphia to Mitchell, Nebraska? Remember you had to go on the aircraft carrier?
Yeah, I don't remember.
I think it was about 3 months, because you got out in October. He got out, I think, in October 1941. It was at Pearl Harbor. That was before I met him. So he can tell you that side of the story.
So you were in Pearl Harbor when it hit, huh?
Yeah. I was on board a ship.
Which ship were you serving on?
I was on a cruiser St. Louis. Light cruiser. We was the third ship out. Two destroyers got out before we did. We followed them out. Then we went out for 3 days. And you come back to Mare Islands for overhaul.
Honey, tell her you didn't say that you were getting ready to take leave and you were topside when you saw the airplanes coming. Airplane with the Jap in the air, in the cockpit, and he dropped bombs.
So when Pearl Harbor hit, you were actually on board, on top, and you saw the planes coming in.
Say yes.
Yeah.
Didn't you say you saw the insignia on the aircraft coming in?
Yeah. The round sun. It had the round...
The setting sun.
Yeah.
Were you next to the Arizona when they hit? You weren't right next to it, were you?
No. Yeah.
But you could see it, right?
Yeah.
With all the people jumping out overboard and stuff. That's horrible.
Did your ship get attacked during Pearl Harbor?
We got out okay. Yeah.
Pretty scary.
Didn't a torpedo hit your ship? When did that happen?
The memory's not too good, Mom.
So you met him in 44, years after that, then, huh?
He'd already been at Pearl Harbor. And, we met and got married in 1946, had two children.
So where did you marry? Where did the wedding take place?
Oh, it took place here in Sacramento at the Methodist Church on 20th and G Street. And I was raised as a Catholic. But we got married in the Methodist because he was in a hurry to go back east. And so we just did what we had to do. And but we had two children. Jerry was born in February 28th, 1947. And Dean was born the following year in August 15th, which was my mother's birthday of the following year, which was 48, wouldn't it be? 48 in August of 48. And our youngest son yesterday was 2 years since he passed away with lung cancer.
Hard to have your kids go before.
It's awful.
So what was it like setting up home after the war, especially as a new couple? And
like I say, when he got out of the service in October of 41, I think it was, he just came right to Nebraska because I was with his sister, and we lived there for 4 years. Our kids were born in Nebraska, and then in 1950, I think it was, when we moved to California. My parents had moved out here in 1940. Like I say, I graduated from McClatchy here. So when we came back, it was 1950, and the kids were little, and so I decided to go back to work. He went to work for my uncle in a grocery store. Years ago, there was Stop and Shop markets. Do you remember them? Yeah, so they were my cousins. And so he went to work for them for several years. And then he went to work for Borden Cheese Company. And he went to work for David Candy Company for a while. Then the last job he had was at Big Boy Market, which was on Marconi and off of Eastern. He was there for several years when he retired.
Now, when you initially were married, did the GI Bill help you as far as housing, or did you use that at all?
Oh, yeah, we used our house payment, on the GI Bill. What was it, about 4% or something like that? And we thought it was a 30-year loan. And when I retired, we thought we had 5 more years to pay on the house. I retired in June, and by God, it was in November, I think it was, we got our thing that our house was paid for. Hallelujah. Boy, that was really nice.
Yeah.
So it was 5 years earlier than we thought, So we had saved, I think it was $900. To pay down on our house. Back then they were pretty cheap. So we finally saved the $900 and we bought the house, and we lived in there from 1950 till we moved over here. It'll be 2 years in March. 60 years we lived in that house.
So tell me, as a single young lady back in the day, what was it about this guy that set him apart from all the other guys?
He wouldn't leave me alone. Well, he kept writing to me, and I'd correspond with him and stuff. And we got engaged, about a year later? And, we were engaged for a long time. And then when we come home, or when he came home, we got married. And I would say, basically, we had a pretty good life.
So when you hit those tough times, how did you stick it out and not give up?
Well, it was tough sometime, You know how servicemen are, some of them. They get to drinking and smoking and things like that. And he used to drink beer quite a bit. And anyway, we managed. We had to with two kids, Had our ups and downs like everybody else. But basically, it's been a good marriage.
And when people ask you, what is your secret, what is your response?
I guess we loved each other.
I'm Odell Gifford, and this is Dorothy, my wife, and the date of our wedding was July 13th, 1941. That was the year the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. So we got married in June, and Pearl Harbor was in December. And we just moved to Sacramento in September, so, and I worked at McClellan at that time.
So let's go back a little bit. Before the each of you met, where did you each grow up? What was your home life like? Siblings?
And... Well, I was born in Colton, California. I'm a California native.
Southern California.
Southern California. It's a little town just, out of L.A., about 60 miles towards the desert. You want me to tell you about Dorothy?
I bet Dorothy could speak for herself.
Oh, I can.
Dorothy was born and raised in South America. So.
South America?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
My father worked for Standard Oil.
And when did you move to the States? How old were you?
When I was about 12, I think.
So you had still memories then. You could understand the cultural difference.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
It was difficult because when you're that age, people are very...
Every time you move at that age, you go to a new school, you got to make new friends.
But
and
it's
when
worse.
you leave old friends, you know, and that's kind of difficult for a young person.
Well, generally, but when you're leaving a different culture,
yeah,
that's another challenge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was the school?
Me foreigner, and you know, yeah. I wasn't welcome anywhere.
What was the school system like versus what you had been raised with?
Terrible.
What were the differences that you remember
in schools?
Uh-huh.
No comparison. It's just awful.
Was South America awful or the United
mm-hmm.
States?
No,
South America.
Going to school in South America.
Because 12-year-olds, that's what, sixth grade?
Don't know.
That was a long time ago. Don't expect me to remember that.
I think you came to the States in 1937.
36 or 37.
36, 37. So she was just, 10, 11 years old, something like that.
Kids have already learned how to read and mathematics, and I'm just kind of wondering, was that another challenge for you?
Yes, but not reading particularly.
You had a good handle on that.
Yeah, but going to school was very tough.
Kids aren't always nice.
Yeah.
Were you the only child?
No. Well, actually, I had brothers and sisters, but when we went to South America, they were left in the States because they don't have schools.
And she was the baby, and they kept them with her with them. And that's the reason her schooling was very difficult down there. It was kind of like homeschooling, I guess you'd call it, really. But she came...
Not really.
When she came to the States in 36, I first met her in 1940 in a little town called Beaumont, California, where we went to high school. First time I laid eyes on her, she was riding a horse, and I was with a bunch of teenage delinquents, and we were riding around in an old beat-up Dodge car. The guy that had the car, his father was the mayor of the town. But anyhow, we saw this new girl that we hadn't seen before, and of course, being smart Alex, we had to pull around and stop and make acquaintances, and we were making all kinds of remarks. She didn't like me very well because I had a big mouth and making smart aleck remarks, you know, and she wouldn't let me ride the horse. She let the other guys ride the horse, but she wouldn't let me ride the horse. Her opinion of me was no, you know. Then of course we got a little better acquainted when she started going to school, in our school.
We were the same year or different?
Yeah, I remember the first time we double dated with another couple. I think there were two or three couples. Anyhow, she had double dated with a good friend of mine, and we left. You were with Louis Buckner, and I was with.
I can't
even remember who I was with. But when we came home, she was with me, and we we decided that I think it's because I danced. She liked the way I danced, and I liked the way she danced. Okay. Anyhow,
dancing
from then on, Dorothy and I were inseparable, and we've been inseparable for the last 73 years. So that's the story of our life, you know. But I spent 3 years in the service in World War II, and that's, you know, we had a few bumps, and that was probably the biggest bump in our in our life. But
and how did you stick through
after the war was over? And
how did you stick through that?
I came home and.
But during the war,
yeah.
How did you handle that, Dorothy, while he was gone?
Well, like everybody else, at the same time they were.
But everybody handles it differently. Some people can't cope.
Well, I didn't. I could have done a lot better too, but it's so disruptive and of everything.
Just to leave her alone for 3 years was we had one child by that time. Our oldest son was born, so she was a teenage mother with one male child, which was tough, real tough during the war. For a while, you worked for the Comergic.
Very short one.
For a short while.
Comergic,
They made ammunition or something like that. She made shells for the Navy, her part. Her mother, everybody worked in war industries at that time, had to do their bit to help out. And, of course, I was in the cadet program.
Which branch?
U.S. Army Air Corps. It's not the Air Corps anymore. After the war, they made a separate branch of service out of it. But I was in the Air Corps, and I went through the cadet program. And I was on a B-29 crew. I was commissioned right after the war. I was in the program at the time the A-bomb was dropped. And I stayed in for about, another year. I got out in November of 46, and the war was over in 45. So I was in the 97th Bomb Group, and we were all set to go to the South Pacific when they dropped the bomb, you know. I'm proud of my war effort because I became a commissioned officer and was on a very, very nice latest airplane and went through all the training. But those were good days, made a lot of friends during that period.
Us younger generations are appreciative of your efforts.
Oh, yeah, well.
So thank you.
Unless you went through it, you can't really understand how difficult it was for young people, especially people like us who were married and all of a sudden you were separated for 3 years, you know, and that's tough. That's really tough.
A lot
of families did not survive during that period.
Well, exactly. That's why I was asking.
Yeah, the marriages did not survive, but ours did. So
how did you deal with the rations with the young one? It's been really tough on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah. I stayed with my mother for a while in an apartment, which wasn't very good. But
When I came home,
worse things.
Yeah, when I came home, we moved back to Carmichael. Bought a home over on Kenneth Avenue on the GI Bill, I might add. And that's where our other two children were born. Our firstborn was born here in Sacramento. We were living on Q Street over there, and I worked at McClellan at that time in the instrument department. But when I came back, they had a new program, and luckily for me, it was a B-29 disassembly, inspection, and repair, and that's what I was trained for. I was a flight engineer on a flight crew. There was nobody that really knew too much about the airplane. And one of the things that happened in those days was the airplanes had to be flown with new engines. We put new engines on all of them. Had to be flown 4 hours before we give them back to the squadrons that brought them in for repair. So they gave me a job as a civilian, the first and only civilian flight test engineer. That was my classification. And I spent the first 8 years of my career out there just flying airplanes, on the airplanes, maintenance flight testing. And of course, while I was in the Air Corps, I went to engineering officer school, and they made an engineering officer out of me, which helped in my job, really, because... So we spent 35 years with the government and with the with the Air Force, worked for the Air Force, and they take pretty good care of us. I retired as a GS-15, was the chief of the aircraft division. It was the aircraft production branch, as a part of the aircraft division. So I had as high as 3,000 people in the shops at one time. When I finally progressed up the line to that level, I held that job probably a year and a half before I retired. But all the way along the line, while I was in charge of the base and transient, I was the production lines, I had them for a while, the F-106 program, all of them at that time. And each time I got promoted and ultimately made the top grade, you know. That's the story of ours.
Meanwhile, back home.
Yes.
Ma is taking care of three kids.
Oh.
When we retired, we built a dream home over on our dream home.
Yeah.
We bought a lot over on Kenneth Avenue, 3 acres. And the creek that runs all drains all of North Carmichael went right through it and ended up in Hoffman Park, went right through the middle of our property. We built a home up on the hill overlooking the creek. I remember when we decided to build on that lot, the first stake I drove was to center on a big, beautiful California oak tree. It was down by the creek. And one of those big kind that went out, and it must have been squirrels and raccoons, and they used to make a playground out of that. I centered it so that our living room bay window would look right out on that creek down the...
Before you retired.
Huh?
That was before you retired.
Before I retired from
you
McClellan. Yeah, we built that
retired.
Back in 1950. We moved in 55, I think it was. Yeah, but we bought the lot back about 49, 50, and I didn't hire a contractor. We built the house, and I subcontracted it, so we built it ourselves. I drove most of the nails in it. And it was a big house, 2,800 square feet, a big double garage in those days, attached. And we built a swimming pool out back, and we had to terrace the hill in order to put the swimming pool in, and acres of lawn. So when I retired, I lost my slave labor. You know, I had two teenage sons that used to, and a daughter who used to help me with that. Help us and my wife take care of everything there, and so we decided to sell the place and scale down, and we moved to Arizona. So we were down there for
nice,
you like that,
20 some years. We love it down there, and we had a home down there also. But our children prevailed upon us to come home. They worked on us quite a while, and we resisted until Dorothy had a heart attack, and so we decided it was time to come home, and they helped us sell the house down there and got us home, and we live here now. We've been here for a little over a year now. So
what do you tell people, or what did you tell people? Did anybody naysay you were getting married at a young age?
Sure. We've been reminded of that throughout our lives. People think it's amazing that we got married so young and have remained married ever since. And that's been the perennial question with people is, how come you folks have lived together for so many years and you got married so young? You know, most of those marriages just didn't survive. And, of course, our stock answer has always been, you got to be lucky. First, you've got to live long enough.
That helps.
You know, and secondly, you got to pick the right person to marry. She's the love of my life, and I would think that I'm the same way. It's a love affair made in heaven, as far as we're concerned.
Heaven on earth.
So there's never any thought. We've had a few rough bumps, but nothing
yes.
so serious that we ever felt that we wanted to separate the family. So I guess you could say we've been pretty lucky, Mom.
I think so.
Yeah. And she's still the most beautiful girl that, that I
know.
Ever.
You're making us look bad, and I'm younger. Stop it.
Yeah, my name is Harry Ferris.
And my name was Marion Sutherland, and now it's Marion Sutherland Ferris. We got married on February 9th, right?
1973, right.
I was just telling my niece that her husband had sent her a, what do you call it on Facebook? It wasn't a text, whatever it was, saying, hey, happy, we've been together a billion seconds now. Happy billionth anniversary. And and Teresa asked for us to give any interesting stories about our remembering our anniversaries, and I'm like, honey, I'm sorry, I hardly ever remember that it's on February 9th. Oh, but I do remember the month we met. So we actually celebrate the month in August when we met. But our anniversary is like my sister's birthday is February 9th, and when I chose the date, I thought, now I'll remember Mary's birthday at least. Now I forget Mary's birthday on my anniversary.
But no. Consistent.
Yeah, consistent. Thank you.
Now, how old were you when you met?
I was 25 and she was 27.
Yes, I was 27. I had just come back from Michigan from helping my niece who had had surgery. She had a cleft palate and they can't do surgery until you're 2 years old. So I had gone home to Michigan the day I came back, I think. I'm not sure. It was like August 10th or 11th. We have a dispute on that.
It was the 10th.
Yeah. I think it was the 11th. It was my first day back after...
To the hospital. She was at the hospital.
Yeah, I worked as a nurse. And Harry was a carpenter. And he fell when he was moonlighting as a carpenter and smashed his elbow. And his uncle was a surgeon. And he knew that he needed an orthopedic doctor instead of just a general surgeon. So he called his friend Harry and had him see him in the emergency room, and Dr. Hughes, Harry, his friend Harry, insisted on putting him on the orthopedic floor and took him to the surgery the next day. So I was off the day that he came in, the night that he came in. But the next day, I was following a nurse who really wasn't, she should have chosen another profession. And so I was, you know, a little disgruntled that I had like 6 or 8 brand new surgeries, but I hadn't had a chance to give them pre-op teaching, which is to say, if you tell a person when they're perfectly conscious what you expect of them after they come out of surgery, when they're perfectly not really figuring things out, then they do much better. They do much better. They don't get pneumonia. They don't get blood clots because you've told them to wiggle their fingers and their toes. So I was trying to give pre-op instructions to like half a dozen patients before I even started my shift. And I especially wanted to get to him before I ever saw him because the nurse who was giving me report said, so I ordered him a regular diet at the end of her report. And I'm like, didn't you say that this guy was vomiting this afternoon? And she said, oh, well, he's better now. And I knew she hadn't checked. I knew she hadn't. So I said, okay, so the first thing I've got to get in 507 and get this new surgery. So I went in there to make sure that he was okay to have regular diet. I said, so, you know, how's your stomach? How are you feeling? And he said, oh, fine. And I said, oh, okay, good. So I checked his fingers and made sure he knew about deep breathing. And then I said, how was your stomach before you threw up this afternoon? And he said, oh, it was fine. And I'm like, do you mind if I keep you on clear liquids tonight? And he said, yeah, no, I'm not hungry anyway. So he says, oh, what he said is, oh, I'm sorry about that. And I'm like, you're sorry about that? Because I asked him, you know, how he felt before he threw up. He said, oh, I was fine. He says, I'm really sorry about that. And I'm like, you're sorry about? And he said, I couldn't find that throw up bucket. So I just grabbed the pillow because it was close. And I'm like, dude, you saved somebody having to mop it up off the floor. That's not something to be sorry about. So then the next hour when I went in there, I was interested in making sure that he was really clear. That was when I was making rounds on all my surgical patients. And I wanted to make sure that he was clear. You know, you've got to keep your fingers moving constantly because it decreases the incidence of blood clots. It's a lifesaver. And same thing with your toes. And, you know, you have to take at least 10 deep breaths every hour. And I'd show him how to do really slow and really out. Count up to 4 when you go in. And I said, and if you're a smoker, you have to actually cough too, is what I was going to say. And while I'm saying that, I said, are you a smoker? And you know, it's just part of my spiel. I was moving on. And then I heard him saying something and I said, I'm sorry, what was it? And he said, do you smoke? And I'm like, that wasn't a social question. And I said, so anyway, if you're not a smoker, then you have to blah, 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 blah. And he's saying something again. And I said, what? And he said, but do you smoke? And I'm like, no, I don't think it's a good idea. It stops the cilia in your lungs from getting stuff out of it. It's dangerous. So then the next time I went into his room, another hour later, he had fallen asleep and he had glasses on. I don't know, if you don't wear glasses, you don't know, but if you fall asleep with glasses on, your ear is very, very sore when you wake up. So I checked his fingers and checked his dressing on his elbow, thinking that that might wake him up. But then when it didn't, I thought, well, I can just take his glasses off then. So I went to take his glasses off, and I was doing it as gently as I could. He goes, "Whoa!" And I said, "Well, I'm sorry, I was taking your glasses." "Don't ever do that." "Don't ever do what?" And he said, "Don't ever take my glasses." "Okay. You were sleeping." And he said, "I know." And I said, I was going to take your glasses off so that your ears wouldn't get sore. And he said, "Don't ever do that." "You were sleeping." And he says, "I know." And I said, "So you want your glasses on because..." And he said, "Well, how do you expect me to see my dreams?" And I'm like, I went out to the nurse's station and I said, "Oh, I'm in love." So the odd thing about that is that I had been, at that time, I was 27. I had been doing this for 10 years. They tell you in nursing school, never date patients. It's just not a good idea. So I had pretty much adhered to that, except for three times.
Three times.
3 times in 10 years. Not bad. So, I mean, the first one was in nursing school, so it actually was like 10 years since I had been. So I was the one who had decided, you know, the first guy was looking for an angel, and I told him, the second guy who asked me, I thought, well, I work with this guy. He knows I'm not an angel, but just in case, I told him. And then he acted like all nurses belong in porno magazines. And I'm like, yeah, that's not it either. So then the third guy, it just didn't work. So I had started preaching to everybody, don't tell them your first name. If you don't tell them their first name, they won't think they should ask you out. Don't tell them your first name. I'm Miss Sutherland. As long as I'm here, I'm Miss Sutherland. Don't tell them your first name. So I was careful not to. I knew he was going to ask me out. And I kept thinking, he's so cute. And then I think, leave him alone. Let him walk away from here and get back to his normal life. And then I think, he's so cute. And then I think, leave him alone. Let him walk away. And I could not make up my mind. And then I came to work a day after he should have been discharged. He was still there, and I thought, there's no way he should still be here. I know he's just staying because he wants to ask me out. So I thought, well, you know, he's so cute. Maybe you should just give it another chance. Leave him alone, you know. So I had this angel and devil on my shoulder fighting with each other right up until the time that he asked. And then I was like, well, I don't know. What did you have in mind? You know, hoping that that would disinclude him. No, I don't go to hockey games, thank you. But he said, well, we could go out to dinner or a show or pretty much anything you want. And I'm like, huh, that might be okay.
They said that might be fun.
Yeah, so.
That might be fun.
I walked away and thought, God, if you're going to say yes to the guy, at least don't be rude. So at the end of my shift that night, I came up to him and I said, by the way, my name is Marion. What's your name? And he said, oh, he said something crazy. Smith. He said, it's Smith. I said, Smith is your first name? Because your last name is Ferris. I know that. And he says, yeah, it's Smith Smith. And I'm like, anyway, he was just flirting, obviously. But so I just wanted him to know that once you get out of here, I am not your nurse. I will never ask you if you're moving your fingers. I will never ask you if you're taking deep breaths. I will not care about what's going on with your elbow. Got it? And he said, I don't want somebody to take care of me. And I thought, okay, well, we'll see. So
the thing about it is, I had a pretty nice carpenter, nice job. I was working for this company out of Indiana. They're putting up schools, prefab schools. Their factories in Indiana. Worked for them. They asked me, said, hey, would you like to become a construction superintendent for us? Travel along. These guys traveled all over the world putting up these prefab schools. And I said, yeah. I had, at that time, I owned two houses, lived in one, rented the other. I was contracting, had a regular job, I was contracting, this, that, and then I said, yeah. So this happened on a Thursday. That Monday, I was scheduled to go back to Indiana and start training for this job. And then this guy had been after me forever to come and tear down his patio cover and rebuild him a new patio cover. And I says, no, I didn't want to do it because I was getting too close. So finally he talked me into it. So I grabbed my brother one night after work. I was just going to knock this thing out. I could knock it out. I mean, no problem. So my brother and I came to this guy's house. We get up there and we start tearing the shingles off of the existing patio cover. My brother pulled out some material behind me, and I'd taken a little step back and I lost my balance. So I'm wavering around trying to catch my balance. I caught my balance, and then I kind of looked at the ground. And I said, you know, the ground's not very far. I'm just going to jump off of this and get my balance. I jumped, landed on my feet, and somehow I broke my elbow, but I thought I hurt my wrist. So I just called my uncle up, said, hey, I think I hurt my wrist, sprained my wrist or something. And he said, okay, come on into the hospital and we'll take a look at it. I had just bought a brand new truck. And my brother says, hey, I'll drive you in your brand. I said, no, you're going to drive my truck. I'm driving my own truck. So I drove myself over there, checked in. And at first they said, when they first checked me, the orthopod first checked me, said, I think you broke your wrist. Then he x-rayed my arm. He said, no, you broke your elbow. He said, we have to operate because if we just cast you up, we have to take part of it out because it will not ever heal. It's going to give you a problem the rest of your life. So I said, okay.
Had to take out the entire head of his ulna.
So I went in there that night. The next morning, I had surgery. They had given me some pretty powerful stuff, and I still wasn't awake. I was pretty drowsy that whole day, like this. The first time she came in and talked to me, I immediately liked her. I said, wow, I really like this. But I was so drugged out and everything, I couldn't remember anything about her. So she's walking away, and I looked at her legs. I go, okay, I'm going to remember those legs.
This was before you were allowed to wear pants in a hospital.
So the next time she comes in, she's giving her spiel about smoking and everything. I had a girlfriend before that was a smoker, and I said, never again. You know, so that's why I asked her when she's going to her spiel. I said, do you smoke? And she's, blah, 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 and she says, what? I said, do you smoke? And she's, that's not a social question, Mr. Ferris. And I go, oh, yeah, you know, so.
I believed what I preached. Don't tell him your first name.
So the next time she came in and she pulled my glasses off, I thought, I got to get her attention. So, you know, that's when I came up with, when she took my glasses off, I can't see what I'm dreaming about. And then she got a little chuckle. I go, oh, okay, this is going to be fun. So there was a guy in the bed right next to me. Oh, he was just a real hell raiser. This guy was raising hell with everybody.
He was nuts.
We got to be pretty good friends, he and I. And he kind of saw that her and I had a thing going. So
he was a professional patient.
Yeah.
A guy who went from hospital to hospital to get painkillers. He was a difficult.
So that night the Denver Broncos are playing on TV, their first exhibition game under John, I forget the guy's name, senior moment. But anyway, the Broncos are playing their first exhibition game under this brand new coach who had been a coach at Stanford and taken them to two Super Bowls, and he was a real hot shit guy, and this and that and the other. They got wiped out 41-0. John Ralston. This is the start of the John Ralston era, and up to that time, Denver had never had a winning season in 13 years. But anyway, so my dad and my brother came in, and we're watching this game, boring game. So I'm dropping like this. All of a sudden, the TV quit working. Well, this guy grabs the remote, starts screaming. Ah! He takes it and he throws it against the wall. Goes boom! You heard that all over the top, the floor where we are. My dad and my brother were like, it's, and we all, what's going on? And this guy is just raising hell. Here she comes in. She comes in, and she just strikes, and she's got a set to her jaw and everything like this. And I go, oh, wow. I go, ooh. I said, man, I got to watch this. This is going to be good. She comes in, and I thought she was going to just raise, just going to cuss him out. And this guy is just screaming and hollering at her, the Stevie robot. And she just walks in. Mr. Abood, what is going on here? Mr. Abood, you have to... And she gives him a... Just rips him good. I mean, just in a very quiet, normal voice, she ripped him up and down. I go, that woman I can live with.
Should have been a warning.
So then, you know, like she was saying, they tried to kick me out of the hospital.
They tried to kick him out? It was time for him to go home.
I still hadn't asked her out. This guy, Abood, wanted to ask her out for me, and I said, oh, no. I said, this guy's going to ruin everything for me.
You would have too.
Oh, I said, no, I'll do my own asking. I'll take care of myself. No, please. He said, I'll set you up, because he owned a bar
and everything. He was a good-looking guy. It's just that he was a professional patient.
Yeah.
And then he's got a roommate who's hurting, has just had surgery, and he's raising hell about a television. I was just furious with him. I was like...
But yeah. She kept her cool. I said, that's a woman I could live with. So then what happened is I hadn't asked her out, and then she doesn't come to work. She's off for a day. She didn't come to work. And I go, oh, my God, what am I going to do now? And I thought, I can't sit by each of these doors and figure out, you know, watch as she comes in, come and go. And I said, take me forever because it's a big hospital. So I was thinking, ding, 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 think, you know. So in comes this doctor's partner.
He's a real hot shot.
He's a real egomaniac doctor, hot stuff. And he's got two nurses following him. And they come in, he kind of looks at my arm. And he writes and dices, okay, you can go. And I'm thinking real quick. He turns around, he starts walking toward the door. And I said, I'm not leaving. And he takes about two steps. And he turns around and says, what? I said, I'm not leaving. And he says, what do you mean you're not leaving? I said, I'm not leaving until my doctor sees me. And he goes, he looks at me and says, oh, you don't understand. Your doctor and me are partners. He says, I take care of his patients. He takes care of my... This guy was acting like I was really stupid, really looking up. And I says, I ain't leaving until I see my doctor. And these two nurses are standing right behind him, and they're laughing, they're giggling behind his back because they know what's going on. And this guy starts talking to me like I'm really dense. And I just, nope, I ain't leaving until I see my own doctor. Finally, he throws up his hand. He walks toward the door. And that was it. And I go, uh-oh. Now what's going to happen? Like the next day, she comes prancing in. That's when I asked her out. And, you know, everything's been great since. Everything's been great. I mean, we've had our ups and downs.
Yeah, he actually was just regaining consciousness. I didn't have a day off until after he went home. He just thought that a lot of time had gone by. And, okay. You know, I mean, there had been two other shifts of nurses, so...
The meds were really good.
Yeah, the meds were good.
Powerful.
Yeah.
The thing is, I didn't know her first name until she told me. I didn't even...
He didn't care.
Didn't know the first name or anything, you know? So I had to get that telephone number.
What was your first date?
That's probably 2 days date? Later. Two
yeah,
days
anything later. Formal or?
Yeah, because
what
I was...
Went to a movie.
And then we went over to his house and I met his dad.
No, we went to the bar first. Went to the bar. No?
No, we went to... I met Daddy.
We drove by my...
The movie, I remember it well.
Yeah. The movie was right by his parents' house.
Yeah.
And he lived kind of another half hour over. So we stopped by to say hello to his dad. I was amazed. I usually break up with guys when they start asking me to meet their parents because I think, got to go downhill from there. So I never thought that marriage was a good situation for a woman to get herself into.
No, I was
dating
never
was
get married
fine.
Either. I was never.
Yeah, that's
get
an
married.
Interesting thing.
My
about
parents
the two
had
of
a bad
us.
Marriage. I didn't want to ever get married either.
So we go out on this date, and he says, "Hey, do you mind if I stop by the house? Mom is out of town, and I just want to say hello to Daddy, and make sure he's okay." I'm like, "Okay."
What are you
I guess
say?
That's not because he loves me, so this can be okay. Get it out of the way. So he stopped, and it was amazing. Daddy felt like Daddy from the minute I met him. On the other hand, his mom was a beautiful woman. She was just, but she looked very young. I mean, you would never, actually, in fact, while he was still in the hospital, it was the day that he was there because he had told Dr. Bowles, no, he's not going home. So when his mom came up in the afternoon to see him, and he went to walk her, he decided to walk her all the way downstairs, not just up. But the first time I came out after 3 and did my rounds, he wasn't in his room, and I thought, oh, okay. Second time I came out and he wasn't in his room, I was like, I wonder where he is. And the third time I was like, okay, I am not having a missing patient here. The nursing station said, have any of you guys seen the guy from 5072? And everybody said, no, you know, I don't know, except for Shirley, who went, and I said, Shirley? And she said, oh, Marion, I wasn't going to say anything, but while you were in report, he... got on the elevator with a redhead. That's fine. This is before he actually asked me out. It turns out that this beautiful redhead that he got on the elevator with was his mom. How did we decide to get? I know. When I was looking in his eyes and I thought, you know, I just want to be here when he's 83. I wonder if you can do that without getting married. But by the time I was 27, I was about 25 when I broke up with, I don't know, the third or fourth guy that had wanted to get married. And I was just, I couldn't do it for all of my life, you know? And I thought, if I'm never going to meet a guy that I'm going to marry, I should stop thinking about having 8 or 9 kids, I suppose. So I had started getting my mind behind being happy being single. By the time I met Harry, I was absolutely not thinking about marriage or family. I had decided that if I met somebody while I was young enough to have kids, maybe when I'm 30 is when I'd like to meet them. And if I didn't meet anybody when I was young enough to have kids, maybe 60, because then you'd have a few years to get used to them before you retired together.
You put a lot of thought into that.
Yeah. Well, it seemed to me that everywhere I looked, once a woman got married and had a child, there was no turning back. And I never met anybody that I didn't think I would never want to turn back from. I could find faults. I had a list of the last two things on my list, in case they got by everything else, was has to be Catholic and has to be negative O. So, blood type.
What? Oh, my God.
This list was designed to weed through. Harry's not Catholic. Neither. He's not negative O.
Well done, Harry.
Well done, Harry. Yeah.
Well, you know, I had a list also. My list.
Oh, dear.
And she just fitted perfectly. Just right down the... Right down. And then the thing about it is, that personality of hers, when that guy's raising hell with her and he's throwing that, and I said, I need a woman around me who, when things get crazy like that...
Don't get crazy yourself.
Can remain calm. And that was it. Yeah. Hey, didn't smoke either. Right down the list, the way she looked, you know, the blue eyes and the brunette, and, you know, all the way. All the way. It was all the way down on my list. And that was, like, the final thing. I said, yeah, that's the woman I can live with. Yeah.
So because all relationships do have ups and downs.
Oh, yeah.
Has she been able to maintain her cool when times
no.
are not the best?
Oh, we have put a number of counselors' kids through college.
Yeah, yeah. Marriage counseling, man. We had, and that's the thing is, at first I fought it like crazy. She gave me the ultimatum. Hey, marriage counseling, or you go your way, I'll go mine.
I figure if you're sick for more than 3 weeks, you get a doctor, right? I mean, it makes sense. You go see a doctor. You go see somebody who made a study of this stuff. You know, if you're having troubles with the relationship and you haven't been able to work it out for 3 weeks, I just feel you should see a professional who can bring some objectivity to it and help you sort through what's going on.
The thing that we learned was that if we spent 1 hour a day to talk, we could work things out.
That was one thing that we always agreed on. When we were new together, we used to congratulate ourselves on wanting to be together but not needing to be together. These years, I'm like, have I failed? Because now I need him. I mean, we came from an era where men thought that their duty was to bring home their paycheck, and as long as they did that every week and kept their wife in a nice situation, they had done what was necessary. I figured that either you were in love, either you were loving each other every day, or you really needed to not be in this relationship. And that's a pretty high bar to set. And I figure that that's why I haven't had the relationship problems that some of my friends have. Because if you set the bar high, the things that you settle for are not catastrophic. Almost always when we've done counseling, our relationship seems stronger and more loving.
And that's another thing, being retired makes a big difference.
It takes
a lot
of stress
out of your life.
Yeah, sure. It takes a lot
of stress
out of
your life.
Well, see, and
it's
some couples,
easy.
It actually causes stress because you're used to that person not being there all the time. Now they're there all the time.
You've gotten to like it because when they are there, they're...
We like each other's company.
See, that's the difference.
We don't need external things. As long as we're together and, you know, we're just hanging out or whatever, it works for us. Our problems come when we're not together.
So how do you spend your time?
We don't know, but we have fun.
You don't know?
No, we have fun. We just, the day goes... We're both busy. We're both busy. We got things we're doing. We do things here.
We're both
but
busy.
I mean, as long as we're together.
But outside of your place here, what do you do outside?
We have a daughter, two grandchildren.
Who's only a mile and a half away.
We have to dinner a lot.
But actually, most of the time we're not here is spent with our daughter and her little family.
Babysitting or just being there with them.
Honestly, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, and that's fine. I think we're both the type of people who do not need external things to make us happy.
But a number of years ago, when I was 36, 37, my appendix ruptured. And after that, my immune system took a dive. And after that, I cannot go out in the outside air without getting headaches, stomach aches, whatever. So now I'm just really glad that I had those 5 years between college and getting married that I was single and did exactly what I wanted every minute of every day. And every summer when I would come home, my sister would introduce me to somebody else. And finally, the last summer, I said, okay, Maggie, no setting me up for dates. I am not interested. I am not dating. I don't get any more interested in guys in Colorado. So just leave it alone, okay? And then I came back to Colorado and met him. Like,
we live on the third floor. You know, you see the door open. Because the pollens are down.
Yeah, the pollens are down at nose level. And when we were looking for a place, we lived on a ranch, and I lived on a ranch with pretty big windows because I got to see the outdoors through the windows. If I wanted to breathe without coughing, if I wanted to talk without coughing or laugh without coughing. And so when we started looking at these places, the only places we would look at are places that had a third floor or higher, because the farther you get from the ground, the rarer the pollens are in the air. Down at nose level, the pollens settle down at about 5 o'clock in the evening, and they stay there till about 8 o'clock in the morning. And I found that I was sensitive enough that I couldn't really go outside until 10 o'clock in the morning without creating allergy problems for myself. So I can't tell you what we would have done if...
Kind of a damper on your outdoor activities.
Here,
you know, we lived on a cattle ranch and about 35 miles from here in Snap. We'd lived there for 37 years. So we sold that. We came into here. And in here, play cards.
Yeah, part of the reason we...
Book club.
Yeah.
There's movies. And then I'm an ambassador, so I help all the new people.
They've got sign language?
Ambassador of what?
Help new people get settled.
Okay.
Yeah. They call us ambassadors, just kind of like to help new people get settled. And we're going to be leaving at the end of the month. We just bought a house.
Don't stress so much when you first meet somebody, I guess, as a way to recap your experience. And insofar as a till death person. Like, don't stress so much about it.
Yeah. I think the thing about it is have an idea what you want, your personal shopping list for a person that you want to have a mate for. I mean, all the way from how they look, how they act, what they look like, and if you can't find what you want, don't jump in. Don't get married.
Yeah, I think not settling for anybody that you can resist settling with. I had a list of things that guys, and most guys couldn't cross that barrier, and with him it just took the barrier down. But it's because I didn't settle for anybody else before I met this guy that just felt like a heart connection, just felt like, I mean, I would look in his eyes and I just wanted to be there when I was 83. I mean, I just knew that this is where I wanted to be forever. And so I just had to do a lot of thinking about, okay, so maybe I will get married. I can't imagine my parents being okay with me just living with this guy for the rest of my life.
Yeah, but I think the thing about it is, when you're single, there's those periods of loneliness, and I think that's when you're most vulnerable and you want to settle just because you want to have another person there, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, when
doesn't work. I think that you have to have somebody that you're comfortable with.
When I was in college, I noticed that girls tended to get married as they graduated from college, so I recognized very early that that was a big danger period. So I resisted the guy who wanted to marry me coming out of school, because it's just a bad period. You need to move through that. You need to have the strength to make your life what you want it to be without anybody else that you're going to be depending on to make your life what you want it to be. And then I read that 26 was vulnerable year for women. And I'm like, huh, well, I'm not saying yes when I'm 26 either. But I mean, there are things that, I mean, if you pay attention to conventional wisdom, I guess, I just think you shouldn't settle. I just think that people say, he'll change. And fortunately, I had a mom who said, you know what, do not ever date or marry anybody with the idea that you can change them, because you can change yourself. And you know how much work that takes. You can't change anybody else.
So put your order, listwise, into the universe for the mate best for you. Do something different. Next time you attend a dinner at someone's home, instead of bringing a bottle of wine, bring a small potted herb plant.